to entertain you. We'll sing your songs.
Hey there. Are you obsessed with things that happened before your time? Well, if you are, join me, the host of Before My Time, Gelsey Lori, to discuss the wonders of the yesteryears that we weren't around to enjoy ourselves. You can find us on all podcast platforms.
Dixieland's a playing, soon you'll be swaying, so come on, sing along.
Listeners, I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme.
We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, FemmeRegard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
Joe, we're back at Newport Beach, and I'm going to tell you this right now. I've started a new thing.
Oh, no.
I'm giving star ratings to these episodes.
Okay. All right.
And we're about to talk about The Perfect Storm, Season 3, Episode 5. I gave this a 3.5 out of 5 stars. Ultimately, I found this episode fairly enjoyable.
I need to know what, like, up till now, what's a 1 star, and up till now, what's a 5 star. Like, go back retroactively. So,
something like Rainy Day Women is an episode I think about a lot. So, I'd say that that was like a 5 star episode for me.
Okay.
All had an absolute blast with it, loved it. I would say that a 1 star episode would be like Season 3, Episode 2. It's not necessarily an indictment of the quality of the episode, but like, how much was I screaming at the TV and contemplating why I'm still doing this podcast?
Okay, good.
And this was mostly wins. I also have to celebrate. I was right. I called it. I think I literally said they introduced the Dean Hess thing. He will be gone by the next episode. That is the OC way. And unless I'm wrong, I believe this is a serious wrap on this dude, right? He's not going to show up in season 4 out of nowhere and just be like, well, hey, guys, I'm back.
Well, he definitely
I heard Marissa's dead. I wanted to join the Core 4 now.
He doesn't,
I hear there's a vacancy in the Core 4.
He doesn't show up in season 4, that's for sure.
All right.
I don't know if he's going to show up again in this season, but with 90% certainty that we're done with Dean Hess for now.
Yeah, fuck yeah. All right, so.
You know who we're not done with? Taylor Townsend.
Taylor Townsend, which we'll get into that. That's next week, theoretically. We start off this episode. Kirsten is still on her, I'm out of rehab, I know how to cook. She's making this fancy breakfast for the guys. And it's funny because I'm like, that looks really good, but it also looks like something that with my like middle class palate would be like, this looks too fancy for me. it's like a poached egg with some type of gravy drizzled over top of it. And I'm like, this looks delicious. I'll probably hate it. Probably not going to like it, but I'm impressed. For Kirsten's entire thing was how bad of a cook she is. That looks like a pretty well done, complicated breakfast.
Yeah, she's trying her best. I mean, just consider that, what, 2 seasons ago, we had like some non-existent maid now. But there was a housekeeper who cooked for them. the whole thing was that, like, you know, Kirsten could order a mean takeout and, you know, organize a great catering spread. So it's nice to see her trying new things.
Yes. No,
I don't. This is not going to turn into, like, this is now Kirsten's new thing and she's going to reopen the Balboa Lighthouse and make it her restaurant.
Like, wait, Joe, are you telling me that there's a character arc that they've introduced that they'll just abandon midway through? Because I have a feeling that I probably won't see Teresa anytime soon. It's just
Teresa will pop up when you least expect her.
I think it's just a loose plot line blowing in the wind once again.
Oh, remember that restaurant that Kirsten owned? Well, yeah. Teresa's apparently love child with Ryan also works there.
Also works there. They'll take anybody.
As a baby.
Yeah. The dean has this vendetta against Ryan and Marissa, and it's like, it's so bizarre. Like, it's okay. So like every time that he's like talking to Sandy, or like that he's put these notes on Ryan's personal record to guarantee that he won't get into a college, it's just like, It has been 2 weeks that you've been in this town. Like, how do you get this strong of a vendetta that quickly? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't calculate properly.
No, I really don't like how they did it, because it's just, there's no, typically, right, with villains, the way that you construct a villain is that you have to give them some sort of, you have to give them a little bit of humanity and origin story, at least the very well-done villains,
well,
right?
But here's the thing. The OC, and I've used this phrase probably 3 times already, and I will probably use it a million more times. The OC loves an anonymously evil person. like it's just like, they're just evil, or they're just a bad human being.
Yeah.
No need to dive any further. Just accept it and move on. We don't have the time to work this out.
I mean, because even like, again, my girl Julie Cooper, right?
Yeah.
Julie Cooper's guiding light is that she is trying to be the best mother that she can be. And that part of that, a big part of that is also like, can I provide for my children and for myself while not... It's very D&D character, right? Like, it's very like, you know, here's your secret motivation. That like
she's like chaotic. She's chaotic lawful when it comes to taking care of her kids, essentially. Like, she'll do whatever is necessary. One of my favorite things to do is add a line of dialogue to a scene. And there's this scene where Summer and Marissa are sitting in the bedroom and they're talking, and Marissa says how she's not really, college isn't really on her radar right now. And Summer says, but you're a senior. How is college not on your radar? And I wrote, oh, because I plan to be dead before this season's over.
It's ominous foreshadowing.
Yeah, exactly. Talking about Julie Cooper, she's like living in this dump of a hotel, trying to like figure out how to get a place for her and Marissa.
Sure.
And there's this visual joke where it looks like she's sunbathing somewhere glorious, and then like someone's getting arrested and like walking right past her. And as it pans out to this like kind of shithole that she's outside of, I'm like, why even bother sunbathing at this point? Like, this is not the place where you want to be just like hanging outside.
Yeah. Why call attention to yourself?
Exactly. Now, something that I don't love in this episode is I don't know why Seth isn't buying Summer's story that she saw the dean and Taylor kissing. Like, it doesn't make any sense to doubt this story. Like, I know that you haven't seen any evidence, but like, why would Summer just like fabricate
that up?
Yeah, like it doesn't make sense. But she does get a fantastic joke that only worked in 2007, where Taylor is texting someone on their sidekick, and Summer says, "I'd like to sidekick her." And I was like, "God damn, that piece of phone technology that was all the rage for like a year and a half, and then just like promptly disappeared when the iPhone became an option." It made me smile. It made me smile. It made me remember simpler times.
But it was also a plot point in Gilmore Girls at this time. There is a scene, I think, in season six. Season six. It's got to be season six. But anyway, maybe it was season five. But there's a scene where Rory's dad, Christopher, gives her a sidekick, and he has one too. And it's like, you know, they're texting and all this stuff. And I remember thinking those things were so cool. I knew someone who had them, and it was just like secret agent type shit.
Let's be honest. At this point in time, I'm booking bands, and I'm booking bands through MySpace. And every member of every band had a sidekick. Every single one of them. Because it was the best way to be connected to some form of the internet on a phone back then. Because you could have AOL Instant Messenger on your sidekick, and you could have access to your emails. So it totally made sense why it was marketed so hard to bands. Like, while you're stuck in a tour bus for the next 8 hours, you can be communicating with fans at the show that you're heading to and getting them excited to come out, and you can be posting on your MySpace, and you can be sending out a newsletter, and you can like be doing all this from the van, not needing to be like at a computer. Because this wasn't even really, I mean, laptops were a thing, but like
not wireless laptops yet.
Not wireless for sure. And even if they were wireless, like it would be maybe 30 minutes tops that you would have of like charged up battery time. Like it was not the norm just yet. So it was kind of the best option, the best of all the best of both worlds. Something that I am really loving in this episode, and it's definitely going to be something that gets messy, but I do like that Ryan and Johnny kind of get along, right? There's a scene where Ryan shows up, and he shows up to the school, and they're like literally sitting there and having a bonding moment, and it is nice. Now, Johnny creates an issue in this episode.
you said that very delicately.
Yes. So, but I don't think, I don't know. It's hard to tell I get what you mean when you said that this was a Jess situation, where they're not going to turn anyone evil, but there's this introduction of a potential new suitor that's going to cause rocky terrain, a la Jess in season two of Gilmore Girls. I don't think that Johnny is nefarious. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that Johnny's like, I know, I'm going to tell Ryan to get a job as a fisherman so he's out of the picture and I can get with Marissa. Like, I think he just literally was like, hey, man, like, if you're down on your luck, if you're, like, done with school and you're trying to figure out how to do things on your own, like, this is a viable option that I think you'd be able to really excel in and make a lot of money doing.
Like, here's the thing about fishermen in Southern California, right? Like, I know that's a thing. I actually know a friend who's like baby daddy is one of these types of fishermen, but it's also very like New England. It's very dangerous catch. Like, it's very midnight mass, right? Where it's like all the kids work on the ship or work on the boats. So for me, it's like, unless you lived here, you would think that, like, unless you lived here and you knew people, like, this just seems weird. Like, it just seems weird that, like, there's this particular kind of blue collar industry in Newport Beach, right?
Yeah, that's a little off. Yeah, no, that's just, you know, plot help there. Summer has this plan to catch Taylor and Dean, and I actually think it's a smart plan, is that she doesn't play her hand. She plants jealousy in Taylor's head to see how she reacts and says, like, yeah, I saw the Dean making out with our gym teacher, was so gross, and like talking about it and then watching and being like, does something come of this? It's a pretty smart way to try to prove your point without revealing your hand just yet. So I've gotta applaud that. This is basically where they find out that, like, Ryan's probably not going to go to college. This is why he's going to go on this fishing boat, potentially.
He put the dean put a letter in Ryan's file that, like, no reputable school
take him in.
Which they say, like, reputable, like, the schools that are there, right?
Yeah.
Like, he could fucking go to, you know, Pasadena City College.
Well, that's what they said. They said, go to a good community college for 2 years, prove your worth, and, like, go into, the, like, an even better college from how good your test scores are there.
Yeah.
We're here to entertain you. We'll sing your songs.
Hey there. Are you obsessed with things that happened before your time? Well, if you are, join me, the host of Before My Time, Gelsey Lori, to discuss the wonders of the yesteryears that we weren't around to enjoy ourselves. You can find us on all podcast platforms.
Soon you'll be swaying, so come on, sing along.
Hi, listeners. I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme.
We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, FemmeRegard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, you know, pooping uniform. This is not
there. And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why did my face seem Floyd Mayweather in the woods?
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
I mean, there's a scene where they're at the dinner table and Ryan talks back to Sandy.
Oh yeah.
And it's a weirdly powerful moment, because it's very rare that you see Ryan talk to Sandy like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he talks to Sandy with all this respect, but it's like, you can't help but feel for this kid who's just tried his best to do everything with the opportunities that are put in front of him and just gets beaten down by nonsense like this.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is a really compelling situation. Marissa goes to convince Ryan not to go, right? And I wrote this weird note. I said, I can't help but love Ryan the more that he's beaten down, though. Like, there's just, like, a very, like, all shucks version of him that comes out when, like, everything's gone to shit. That is kind of weirdly charming to me. But she goes to convince him not to leave, and her pep talk is essentially basically just screaming at him for what a piece of shit he's being, and how selfish he is, and how he reminds her of her dad running away.
Oh,
and I was like, God damn.
I loved it for a couple reasons, because you think it's going to be this poignant message.
Oh yeah.
And then she's just like, you're leaving just like my dad left, and it didn't work out for him either. And then just
Mic drop, walk away. Like, what more is there to say at that point?
It's almost like you can kind of see, and this is probably giving, you know, no offense to Misha Barton, but this is kind of maybe giving her a little too much credit, because, like, you can, to me, it's like you can tell that she wanted to like be lovey-dovey and forgiving, and then like turn and then abandon that because she started to feel anger, which is something I relate to a lot. It's like, I feel like I'm going to forgive you right now, but in this moment I have so much anger that I'm gonna abandon that strategy. And then she abandons him.
I also want to shout out, and I, Rachel Bilson, man, like, I was looking up her credits, 'cause she hasn't done much in the last 10 years.
No.
Like almost no movie roles, and like the occasional TV show appearance here or there.
Mm-hmm.
Her comedic timing is the best in the whole show. Like there are times in this show where I'm like legitimately frustrated by everything happening plot point wise, and she just delivers a line that's like a full home run. The scene where they're all awkwardly having dinner together, She is like the best piece of levity throughout that entire scene, because she's trying to hold it all together and trying not to let it fall apart, and is like trying to be bubbly. Like, I really, the last like couple episodes, I've really grown to appreciate Rachel Bilson as just a comedic actress. And I'm waiting for like her in her 40s to make this big comeback, doing like comedy mom roles or something. Mm-hmm. 'Cause she really does have the skills. Let's briefly talk about Charlotte. She's not a huge focus on this episode. It's kind of more like she shows up to remind us that she's there. She might be the worst scam artist I've ever seen in my entire life. Because, like,
why would
now,
you say that?
Because she's somehow buying a super expensive condo with the hypothetical scam money that she's going to get it. So, like, it's just like, how much overhead are you spending on your hopeful big get? You know what I mean? I feel like every single thing she tries to do to make this Kirsten thing work is just like, it's almost comical. Like the first couple episodes, it was like maniacal. And now I'm watching it, I'm like, this is like watching a villain in a Hanna-Barbera cartoon just like get in their own way with like the main hero never even knowing that they're dealing with a villain. You know what I mean? Like, like, they're just such, like, she's like the Snidely Whiplash of
very clumsily.
Yeah, like, I don't think Kirsten's ever going to figure out that Charlotte's a scam artist. I think that she's just going to bumble her way through it and then realize, like, oh, this isn't working. I should just go. it's real rough. The last thing that I had written down that made me laugh is the way that they entrap the dean, right, is that they get a phone, they text Taylor from the phone claiming to be the dean. And in that moment, they rattle off like 6 plot points that have happened in the history of the OC where they're like, we're going to stay at this hotel. And they're like, that hotel? Isn't that the hotel where Marissa's mom had sex with Luke? And where this happened? Yeah. And where this plot point happened?
Yeah, it's like, oh my God.
Where Ryan got Teresa pregnant? Like,
There's like all these, like everyone needs this. What does Seth call it? They're like den of iniquity or the den of sin. Yeah. But it reminded me of like how every time that the Mars investigations, like Papa Mars and Veronica needed to hide someone, they always chose that shitty Ocean Beach Hotel.
Yep.
Which, here's a couple things. That the facade of that place is a real hotel. And I've actually been there before because I had a friend who stayed there for her birthday once, and it's not that bad. It's not shitty. Yeah. But it's just so like, it's like you need to have the one, like, I refuse to believe that there is only this, like, what do they call it? The sea sprite, I think is what it's called in Veronica Mars. Like, you can't, there's got to be more than one. Like, I know.
Which, like, the flip side with the Veronica Mars of it all, like, if you're trying to find a person and you even know that the Mars family agency is even remotely tied to that person in any way, you're like, okay, I guess I'll start at the motel that they put all of their clients in week after week. And then Sandy Cohen, man, working his magic, like, selling the existence of photos that may or may not have existed just through his very persuasive ways. And what ultimately happens is they basically say to Taylor, either you go and talk to Seth's dad and you tell him the truth, or I will make sure that every single person in the school knows that this is a thing that happened. And what is that going to do for you?
Yeah.
Like, so it's a pretty, they played it pretty well. Like I said, all in all, really liked this show. Had a nice blend of shenanigans and drama comedy and heart, the things that I do look forward to in a good OC episode. So 3.5 out of 5, Joe. 3.5 out of 5.
Okay. All right. I can receive that.
Now, what I wouldn't give 3.5 out of 5 to is the soundtrack on this week's episode.
Shitty, right?
Yeah, forgettable. Not really anything going on there. We've got Blind Asylum by Orodia Fink, I think is how it's pronounced. That's when Ryan and Bizarro Ryan are talking about his options for the future, also known as Johnny.
Bizarro Ryan.
Weight of the World by the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club plays when Marissa confronts Johnny about telling Ryan about this job. And then the Dandy Warhols, Holding Me Up, is the last song of the episode. I'm just going with that Dandy Warhols song because, A, I like the Dandy Warhols. B, we were talking about Veronica Mars earlier, and they do the Veronica Mars theme, so it seems like fate.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to agree with you because I really don't have an opinion. Like, I was, yeah. I remember after I watched, you know, we do these two at a time, so I watched both, and I was just like, is that it? Is there really nothing? Was there nothing memorable?
I feel like if we were to sit down and look at all of the songs in the different episodes, I'm sure we could find what is the song that ate up so much of the soundtrack budget in a specific mm-hmm. episode that we had to deal with bullshit for four episodes afterwards. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm sure that there's like these episodes where the song's price point is so high. And then they're like, all right, well, now we just got to find some bands on MySpace and see if they want to send us a song for free to play in the OC that no one's ever heard before. Well, the last thing we got to do is talk about our pop culture promotion. This would have made way more sense in October, but whatever. I'm way behind on these pop culture promotions. I watched a lot of shit. There is a very great documentary, very upsetting documentary, that was on Hulu. It may be on Netflix now, too. There's like this... Have you seen that there's like a weird thing where streaming apps are like releasing their stuff on Netflix as well? Like mm-hmm. School Spirits is both on Paramount Plus. It's a Paramount Plus original show that's also on Netflix. It's very weird.
I don't like it because quote-unquote...
Well, it devalues why do I have Paramount Plus at a certain point, but...
It does two things, right? It's like, okay, are we headed for some sort of like monopoly situation? I don't know why there's balloons. Are we headed for some sort of monopoly situation? It was the secret word, monopoly. Yeah. Or is it that this show was originally, like, it was canceled on Paramount Plus and has now been picked up and will be on Netflix, because they did that with You.
But Paramount Plus has already announced that they're doing the second season of School Spirit, so I don't know what the fuck is going on.
And
but
there's
anyway.
Like, have you seen like there's like Top Chef is on Netflix, but it's like not even all the seasons of Top Chef.
Well, that's like Survivor. Survivor, like random seasons of Survivor are on like Hulu or Netflix, or if you go on Paramount, you have the whole like 43 mm-hmm. season run. Anyway, my point being, there's a documentary on Hulu, possibly it's also on Netflix, called Monster Inside: The Truth of McKimmie Manor. Mm-hmm. If you know anything about haunted houses and scares and stuff, you know that McKimmie Manor is awful. The people who run it are sociopaths. It just seems like a very bad situation. And there was a previous documentary that tried to stay very biased about it. Sure. That was kind of just focusing on like, here's what the operations are like, and here's this kooky guy who runs it, and like, here's some interviews with people who sign up for it and why they love it. This is interviewing people who years later are still having PTSD and trauma around what happened to them inside of that home and are working on a lawsuit to basically shut the place down.
It's still operational.
If it's not operational, it's only within the last year that it is not operational. And it would be because of this documentary if that was the case. Like, it dives into more of the background of the guy who runs it. And when that other documentary was made, he had people who worked for him. You know what I mean? Like, it was like he would come up with these ideas and he'd have like 10 or 15 employees. He has no more employees, Joe. He does these 12-hour tortures completely by himself. And that alone is like, that's weird.
That's not that it's unwell. That person is unwell.
Yeah. So it's very interesting. I definitely recommend watching it. Obviously, huge trigger warning, in the sense of like, they're talking about some really messed up shit that people did inside these houses. So there's that. Joe, how about you? Give us something more jolly.
So you know how I love cookbooks, right?
Yeah.
So I got a new cookbook for Christmas. It is called All About Cookies. Mm-hmm. And it's from, it was from my sister. And basically it is it's a cookbook that is by Christina Tosi, who some folks may know her because she's the creator of Milk Bar. And, you know, you've probably seen the like Milk Bar cookies or cake pops at your local Target or on the internet. And I've had her stuff. It's really great. I've been to the Milk Bar in Vegas, and she made a cookbook about just cookies, but it's all like, this cookbook is solidly like intermediate to advanced for bakers. Okay. And I say that because like initially when you're looking at the recipes, everything is by weight, which is how like quote unquote the like more advanced bakers do everything, because it assumes you have a scale and you're not just like measuring things and like your little measuring cups that you got when you were in college. And I've only done one cookie from here so far, but it was the pecan butterscotch pudding cookies. And it has like instant butterscotch pudding in it and pecans, and the recipe only makes 12, but they're huge. So delicious. I'm about to try, and maybe I'll send you a picture so you can post it on the socials, but I'm about to try the Cinnamon Toast Crunch marshmallow cookies.
Joe.
Yes. Do you have type 2 diabetes now?
No. It's a couple months away still, but you know, San Diego Comic-Con's on the horizon.
Yes.
And I'm usually trapped alone at a table the whole time.
Well, you want me to bring you cookies.
Yeah. I'm just saying, if you're going to brag about how good these cookies are, maybe homeboy should get to try them once in a while. But you know, Joe, besides me wanting to eat your cookie, we will...
Oh, Matt.
We got a ton of other...
Many have tried.
Many have tried. Many have failed.
Many have failed. The lucky have succeeded.
There are, I'm sure there will be plenty more people trying to eat each other's cookies in next week's White People Problems, because these horny teens and Newport Beach just equal all types of sexy, sexy shenanigans.
Yeah.
Obsessed with things that happened before your time? Well, if you are, join me, the host of Before My Time, Gelsey Lori, to discuss the wonders of the yesteryears that we weren't around to enjoy ourselves. You can find us on all podcast platforms.
Soon you'll be swaying, so come on, sing along.
Listeners, I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme
We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, femregard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.